Tail hitch your net worth with magic internet money.
Thank you for tuning in to Magic Internet Money. I'm Brad Mills, and this is a really good episode for anyone who might be curious about what's going on with Bitcoin in developing countries. There's a lot of naysayers who are downplaying how Bitcoin is helping people be used as money or method of exchange. People will say that Bitcoin's only being used for speculation or store of value use case. And I'm glad that I was able to do this interview with Ray, who's going to help dispel those rumors and put those false narratives to rest. Ray's built Paxful into one of the most impactful companies building on Bitcoin, I think. They've been a leader in building out Bitcoin's usage as a solution for millions of people in developing nations all over the world use Bitcoin as remittance or as that method of exchange use case. It's not altcoins or stablecoins that poor people are using for remittances, it's Bitcoin. Bitcoin is a real peer-to-peer decentralized finance, and Paxful's proving that. So thanks everybody who's subscribing and leaving reviews. I have no sponsors for this show. I do it so I can have inspirational conversations with folks like Ray. So if you're really enjoying it, please leave me a review. And I actually have been printing out the good ones that I've been getting and reading them a few times a week as kind of like a gratitude exercise. So anyway, with that, let me say I'm grateful for you guys for listening. And now let's get to the conversation with Ray. What am I going to do?
Brad Mills is a partner at X Squared Ventures. All opinions expressed by Brad and his guests do not reflect the opinions of X Squared Ventures or X Squared Management. Investing in cryptocurrencies is high risk and you can get wrecked. Do not treat any opinion expressed on this show as investment advice, but only as an expression of Brad's opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only. Do not attempt to hodl without doing your research first. The world not the way it used to be.
No, no, no. My guest today is Ray Youssef, CEO of Paxful, which is a peer-to-peer Bitcoin remittances payments marketplace that serves a lot of customers in developing nations and Africa and places like that. And Ray's been a longtime Bitcoiner, Wall Street, you know, Occupy Wall Street activist. So I'm just glad to have you on the show to talk about what's going on globally with Bitcoin, because you're one of the experts there that knows the most about what's happening in the payment space and the peer-to-peer space with Bitcoin globally. So thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Brad. You're a real leader. Front lines all the way. That's why we're here. Change the world.
Oh, shucks. Getting Satoshi points already. The thing is that when Bitcoin started, one of the two competing narratives or the two things that drew most of us in was the store value and peer-to-peer payments. And you started Paxful, what year was it?
2015.
So 2015... you started Paxful. I had read that you had previously done some activist demonstrations and the Arab Spring and like Wall Street and stuff like that. Do you want to talk a little bit about like what brought you into Bitcoin?
Tahrir Square was a real eye-opening event for me. I was born in Egypt to Egyptian parents, and I came to America when I was 2 years old, so first-generation immigrant. And I heard one day, I wasn't really very connected to Egypt, didn't have many Egyptian friends, didn't really speak the language very well or anything, but one day I heard that the Egyptian people were fighting back against a cruel dictatorship, and I was really inspired, and I wanted to help. So I decided to go buy a plane ticket over there, and I was the only one on the plane on the way there. Everyone else was actually trying to flee the country. I got there just in time for that, they called it the Day of the Camel. It was that day, the bloodiest day of fighting, actually, where about 800 people died that night. And I got off the plane, got straight to Tahrir Square, and I saw it all unfold right before my eyes. You know, they cleared out the square. Mubarak sent in his goons all the week, got rid of all the women and children, got them out of there. And it would just be a bunch of me and a bunch of young guys sitting there breaking up pieces of the street to make stones to fight off these hooligans that were trying to go in and basically kill everyone and drive everyone away and kind of break the back of the whole revolution. So it was quite the scene. Words can't describe it. You know, imagine it was like World of Warcraft, but people were fighting with stones and garbage cans and whatnot. And it turned out to be pretty bloody. I managed to actually get out of Tahrir Square in the middle of the night. Pretty badly hurt, but I survived. Anyway, I came back to New York about a week after that, and I thought we had won. You know, was Mubarak stepped down. I didn't realize that the Arab Spring was not what it was meant to be. But when I got back to the States, everything they were saying about how it went down was literally the exact opposite of what I saw happen right there on the ground in the front lines. And I wonder what was going on. And it was only me and Malcolm Gladwell, literally, that were trying to tell everyone the truth. I remember me and him were actually on this forum fighting an army of trolls that were spewing these lies. And I was like, what is going on? Anyway, that was the impetus of my political awakening. And I kept falling after one level of the rabbit hole after the other. I ended up camping out on Occupy Wall Street. And I won't go into many details, but I began to realize that we're drowning in a sea of lies. And control of the financial power is how it all began. So for humanity to win, to create a world of abundance and prosperity, which I believe is very possible, I believe that's the natural state of humanity, for that to come back, we need to take back control of that financial pillar of power. And then I heard about Bitcoin. I was like, wow, wait a minute. This is something real here. This is a payment network that no one person can control. This could be revolutionary. This could actually help the little guy. That's what I thought. The little guy could actually have a shot here, because I saw firsthand, 800 people died that night in Tahrir. All these young boys threw their bodies into the machine. And what happened at the end of it all? Egypt's worse off now, right? So what you really need to do is focus on the money, right? Follow the money. Learn to use the money as a tool to create wealth and abundance. And that's what Bitcoin is. So I met my co-founder, my very first Bitcoin meetup at the Bitcoin Center in New York. My co-founder is Artur Shabak. He's an Estonian dude. We met in New York City. We were the only two tall guys in the whole meetup, so we became fast friends. And we started Paxful, and we really bonded over the thought that it could actually help the little guy. And at the time, the narrative was, you know, it's payments. You can buy coffee and everything with Bitcoin. People can do remittances a lot more cheaply with Bitcoin. And we thought, this is great. Let's try some, build something on top of this. And what we've come 5 years later is that we've seen that the narrative is actually quite different. The users, the customers, especially the peoples of Africa, and special shout out to the peoples of Nigeria. They've taught us what Bitcoin's true killer app is. And I'm here today to tell you guys everything I've learned from them.
What is the killer app of Bitcoin in your experience?
It's a clearing layer. It's a clearing layer for all the world's money. Bitcoin itself does not have to function as money, but it can function as a clearing layer for money. For example, I use Paxful every single day. I just paid an invoice in the UK with Paxful. I don't have a UK bank account, but I have a Bank of America account. And I also have a credit union account. But unfortunately, neither of those banks will let me do an international wire unless I'm physically in the branch in New York City. And this is something I tell regulators all the time. Like, hey, why would any normal person use Bitcoin? They're all just money launderers. Why wouldn't you use Wells Fargo? Perfectly valid question. I just gave you guys one possible example, right? My Bank of America account won't let me wire the funds to an English bank account unless I'm there, right? So, or I can go onto Paxful, load up some Bitcoin in my Paxful wallet, go there and sell some Bitcoin to some guy in the UK for a UK bank transfer, send him my invoice, perfectly legit. I'm KYC'd, he's KYC'd. Here's the invoice with my name on it. Just make the payment for me. Here's some Bitcoin. I can even give him a bonus on top of the Bitcoin. He takes care of it for me. It's still cheaper than my bank would charge me. And it's literally instant, since the guy is honestly doing a bank transfer from the same bank in the UK to the same exact bank in the UK. It's beautiful. And I can do the same thing to Europe, to a bank account anywhere in the world. I can do the same thing to China via Alipay or WeChat Pay or any one of the 355 payment methods we support. I can basically access any financial network on the planet using Bitcoin.
Do you run into problems with governments that don't want to see that kind of a tool be allowed in their citizens' hands?
It's nothing quite so dramatic, but it's definitely something that we encounter. We're in the age of compliance, and at Paxful, we make every effort to be compliant and to help educate regulators, because they're just learning. By far, the most aggressive regulators are the American regulators.
Even really?
Paxful, by far. Uncle Sam, his arm is long. He will reach you anywhere in the world. Even though most of our user base is abroad in the emerging world, we still have to contend with that. And we do have to contend with that, because just giving the people in emerging worlds these tools is not enough. We have to connect the people in the emerging world, the people in the Western world. That has to happen. The world has to meet. Too often, there are too many blockades. And what I really like to think is the greatest benefit of Bitcoin and the mission of Paxful, really, as I'm starting to see it, is quite simply to cure financial apartheid, to put an end to that. And there's so many examples of that.
You know, what would you say, like, financial apartheid is for someone who doesn't get the reference?
It's basically walls that are put up to keep people segregated, right? You, this is your place, you live here, this is, you know, the poor or black or whatever section you want to call it, and this is our section. Your money is not as good as our money. I'll give you some examples. If you are in Nigeria and you have a bank account and you have a debit card, bank card, a lot of these Nigerian banks will limit you to $100 a month you can spend online maximum with that card, even if you have thousands and thousands of dollars in the bank. You can't even, you know, buy an Xbox. This is a small example. In Africa, you know, it's difficult just to send money to the country next door, right, to using the banking system there. They use a broken down version of the SWIFT system. It's easier to actually take the money in a suitcase and move it on a plane than it is to use the banking system. There's 2,000 payment networks in Africa. Only 3% of them talk to each other. But the financial apartheid really becomes apparent when you look outside of the country. For example, if you are a merchant in Africa and you want to sell some stuff like video games, you know, electronics, iPhone cases, whatever it might be, they don't make that stuff in Africa. So you have to buy it from China, which is cool, but how do you pay for it? African bank accounts, nearly impossible to send money to China or places like that. What a lot of people have to do, a lot of merchants in Africa will do, like especially places like Nigeria or even Ghana, they will have to buy USD on the black market, take a 20% loss, find a way to get that USD to an American or European bank account that'll somehow let them allow them to get it to Hong Kong. And then from there, they can make the payment to someone in Shenzhen. Or they can get onto Paxful, sell some Bitcoin for WeChat Pay, and boom, invoice is paid in an instant. I'll give you guys some more examples of financial apartheid. I think it's useful so everyone understands how deeply ingrained the problem is. There are 14 countries in Africa that are still controlled by the French. So the African franc, right, it's in 14 countries, and it's about as African as the Federal Reserve is federal. It's a complete scam. They are printed in Paris. They are sold to these African economies at cost. And even worse, through that system, Paris can control the volume of money in circulation. So they can actually impose almost complete financial control over these 14 economies in Africa. This wasn't 50 years ago. This is right now. And this is the world that Africans have to deal with. So when people ask me, you know, why is it that, you know, Africa can't get it together. They have all those natural resources and all that money. They should all be rich. I tell them, well, imagine if it was nearly impossible to send money from New York to New Jersey and New Jersey was still under the control of the British. How advanced would the United States be? And that's the situation that Africa is in right now. And I call it financial apartheid. Maybe there's a better word, but I think that does the job.
Well, it definitely feels like oppression and not fair. They don't have access to a sound form of money. And a lot of people in the blockchain space and the crypto space and the stablecoin space, they will say that Bitcoin is not good to be used by merchants and people in developing nations or just people in general as money because it's so volatile. So they're working so hard to try to lower the fees of these coins and provide a unit that these people can own in their wallets. You know, just bank with the USD or some stable coin. But even though maybe let's just suspend like the maximalist sort of thought there about what makes a cryptocurrency valuable and what properties are valuable. Let's just say that, okay, for sure, a digital dollar is less volatile than a Bitcoin right now. But regardless, isn't it true that people are using Bitcoin anyways? They just choose to use Bitcoin more than any other cryptocurrency for these remittances and peer-to-peer payments overseas?
Yes, it is true. It is true. And Paxful has played a large role in that. We've chosen to support solely Bitcoin for a very, very long time because we truly believe in Bitcoin. I don't call myself a maximalist, but I do believe I'm a Bitcoin optimalist. I believe we need to put as much momentum and energy behind one clearing layer as possible. I'm certainly not a big fan of the USD being the only choice, although I will admit, you know, that Tether does It does have a lot of the benefits of cryptocurrency without any of the negativity of volatility, etc., and that is useful, and that's why we support it, because our users ask for it. That being said, Bitcoin still keeps a very close place to our hearts, and we believe that Bitcoin will eventually come out on top going into the future. I don't know if it's going to be the winner 20 years from now, but within the next 5 years, we're going to see a world of immense turmoil. We're going to see a world where the currency wars are going to go into high gear. And we're going to begin entering a world where the USD might not be the most stable currency in the world anymore.
Right.
We can see the tumult that's coming because of this election to the United States. And whether, you know, Trump wins or loses, I think we're going to see extreme chaos. And I think Bitcoin will be a safe haven in more ways than people can imagine. And the great news is the people of Africa are ahead of the game. You know, 4 years ago, when we went into Africa, I started saying Africa's going to lead global cryptocurrency adoption with Bitcoin. And everyone laughed. They said, Africans are not going to figure Bitcoin out. They only make $2 a day, all this nonsense. Fast forward now, Africa is already leading in
awesome.
Number of Google searches, in number, sheer number of transactions. It's already happening. And there's a reason for it.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear. Like, I was started to feel in the summer that maybe that these other coins were going to potentially win the remittances use case, because you start to see how much Tether is growing and how much USDC is growing. But what it turns out, it feels like to me anyways, and I'd like, that's why one of the main reasons I wanted to have you on to talk to you about it, because it felt like to me that after looking at the number of users and the data that I was looking from DeFi and DeFi Pulse, which shows like how many users there are, which are the dominant assets on Ethereum that are being used, it's stable coins and it's Bitcoin. It's not ETH and it's not other cryptocurrencies. It's someone else's dollars, which stable coins are. It's just dollars in Circle's bank or Tether's bank. And then you get a digital receipt for it on in your blockchain wallet. So you can use it, but it's not yours. So it doesn't have the sovereignty properties that if they try to executive order 6102, you know, put that out again, it doesn't matter if you have the private keys to someone else's dollars in a bank somewhere, you're not, you know, they can seize it. And Bitcoin seems to be, from what I saw with Paxful's data and from Abra and Local Bitcoins and Bisc and HODL, and like all of these peer-to-peer, even BitPay, all these payment processors, peer-to-peer places, yeah, they all show that Tether's increasing, but not like it's increasing in DeFi. And it seems that like 90% of the volume is still Bitcoin, whether it's merchants, whether it's peer-to-peer. And the Tether and the USDC, most of the volume is actually just rich whales and VCs and crypto traders just trying to do like Ponzi trading or yield farming or whatever in this bubble. And it doesn't seem like it's actual people, like impacting people's lives. Like what you're doing is impacting people's lives. They're using Bitcoin. Can you talk to like what percentages your users are using Bitcoin versus stable coins, and like maybe where stable coins are more used or where Bitcoin is the most used and things like that? I'm just kind of really curious about the demographics of Paxful's users and what parts of the world are using Bitcoin more and like what are they using it for, stuff like that.
Absolutely. So previously to adding Tether, 100% of our users were using Bitcoin, and it's still overwhelmingly Bitcoin right now. But the question is, you know, who are our users? Well, our biggest market is Nigeria. Second biggest is America, and then the rest is India and the rest of Africa and the emerging world, Ghana, Kenya, South Africa. So really, we have pioneered actually making Bitcoin a reality in the emerging world, which was extremely difficult because there are immense challenges, especially in peer-to-peer in the emerging world, fraud being one of the biggest challenges. You know, proper KYC, Paxful has really worked hard to innovate proper KYC and to really take compliance to another level, to make things safe for people. Happy to report that after 2 years of really extensive work on compliance in peer-to-peer, leading the way, that we're the safest peer-to-peer marketplace. We're even safer than the conventional exchanges when you look at the numbers. But the real gem here is how people are using Bitcoin on Paxful. It is not for speculation, and it is not for gray use cases. It is for real use cases, meaning for remittances, for payments, for commerce, and for wealth preservation. They are actually using it that way. They're not just using it to invest it. And the reason I know that is because I've actually talked to these people. I actually go and I meet these people. Last year, we went to South Africa and Kenya, And we did a university tour at 8 different universities. We went to a university and we gave away 1 Bitcoin at each university.
Oh, awesome.
Split up amongst all the students, of course, not 1 Bitcoin to each student. And we learned quite a few things. Number one, you know, the first time I got up on stage and I said, "Hey, everybody, I'm going to talk to you about Bitcoin today." Everyone's eyes rolled. And the reason that happened is because when you say Bitcoin in Africa, everyone immediately thinks scam.
Yeah, they think Cardano or OneCoin or something like that.
Exactly. Cardano, OneCoin, multi-level MLM scams that have come from the outside, even crypto mining, which always turns out to be a scam. People lose money. Even day trading, 99.9% of people lose money there. So everyone that you talk to has literally lost money or knows someone that has lost money using crypto. And I suppose people come to them and say, "Hey, invest in this." But I said, "Okay, hold on, guys. I understand you've been through this. But I'm not here to talk to you about a method of investment. I'm talking to you about a means of exchange, how you can use Bitcoin to access every financial network on the planet and to put you on equal or better footing than those folks living in Europe and America. And even better, you can actually exploit the magic of arbitrage to start your own business, because the price right. of Bitcoin is different in other places. If you can get Bitcoin cheaply in Europe, right, through maybe a family member that lives in Berlin, you can have them send it to you and you can sell that Bitcoin in Nairobi for plus 10%, or a place like Malawi for plus 40%. When we went to Nigeria 4 years ago, the price of Bitcoin was 40 to 50% above market because there was no Bitcoin in the country and it's extremely difficult to get Bitcoin out of Nigeria. There's whole companies that specialize in getting Bitcoin out of places like Nigeria or other places in Africa. Egypt is even worse. In Egypt, it's a prison, literally, for money. Places like Ethiopia, like impossible to get the local money out of the country. It is illegal to do so. So you find, and that's again, another example of financial apartheid. The money is stuck in those places.
Do you operate in Libya?
No, we don't operate in Libya. We had to pull out of Venezuela as well.
Okay.
We went on the OFAC blacklist. Same thing with Iran. We don't operate there. We're a fully compliant organization. You know, we have to be. You know, we're an American company. So, you know, my heart goes out to the people of those countries. I hope there does appear a solution for them. And then Bitcoin is always there for them as a solution by itself, as an independent clearing layer, you know, as a network, which is great. But Paxful cannot be involved in those countries.
Do you follow personally what's going on with the Bitcoin scene in those countries that are kind of facing these financial regulations, like the sanctions and everything?
Yeah. I mean, here at Paxful, it's like being in the Justice League headquarters, you know, with that big map on the screen and then the red blip goes off. Oh, my goodness. Huge deflationary crisis in Lebanon. Someone sucked $30 billion out of the economy and now the banks won't let anyone out. People are starving. What do we do? You know, like that happens in Argentina, Turkey. These things happen all over the world. And when these things happen, we start to mobilize and say, okay, how can we help these people? We have three values at Paxful, and our number one value is to stay connected to the streets, meaning we actually have to understand what real people are going through. And that's something that people in crypto really don't do very well. A lot of super smart people here, but they don't really think talking or understanding the user on the street is important. But for us here, it's vital.
What are your other values?
Our second value is to build for people, meaning we build real products for real people. We're very product-based. Paxful is not an abstract thing. It's a tool that real humans use. It's not just another tool for robots. And, you know, be a hero. That's our third value. That's us mobilizing to actually make a difference when it's needed. And we're also building schools and wells. We have a mission to build 100 schools and wells in Africa. We've just built our fourth school in Nigeria. We just completed our fourth well as well. It's about 250,000 liters, and this provides clean, fresh drinking water for over, I think it's going to provide drinking water for over 2 million people now as well. So we're always, you know, we're trying to be heroic here, but it's a team effort. Essentially, Paxful's mission at the end of the day is we're just trying to create wealth for people.
That's awesome. That's very commendable. I love those three values. And you definitely seem like you're living the values, being there and trying to go visit the countries and talk to the people and build the schools and do your philanthropic efforts and evangelize Bitcoin rather than get sucked into the crypto rabbit hole. So I'm curious, what caused you to take the lead there for the company and just decide to solely focus on Bitcoin when it comes to cryptocurrency, even though you adopted some Tether for practical purposes or whatever. Some people were probably asking for it because they didn't want the volatility. Understandable. Yeah. What made you choose not to go like down the Bitcoin Cash or BSV or Litecoin or any of these other rabbit holes? Why did you stay with Bitcoin?
It's going to be a corny answer, but it's the truth. We're good guys, you know? We're not just out here to make money. Like, you know, we're totally bootstrapped. We never took any money from VCs, which is why we can say, hey, we're going to build 100 schools with company money, with my own money. And we realized that if we, you know, we add all these other coins, yes, we will make more money off fees and rep volume and whatnot. But at the same time, we're just going to confuse people. You know, they're here just learning about this magic internet money for the first time. And if you stop someone in the middle of that onboarding process and say, oh, by the way, there's 67,000 other shit coins here that you can invest in, huh? That's not cool. It's not kosher. It's not helping anyone. You know, I'm not CZ. I'm not Justin Sun. I'm Ray Youssef.
I'm really into that use case. And I want to see Bitcoin be a tool to help people all over the world escape their shitty currencies. I followed some Bitcoiners in Africa, some people from Nigeria and different parts in like Ghana and different parts of Africa. And I was just kind of like following them on Twitter and watching how Bitcoin was springing up in Africa. And in 2017, it's like all of a sudden, all these people that were previously Bitcoiners in Africa were starting to talk about like learning about blockchain, learning about EOS, learning about, or not EOS, ADA, Cardano. It seemed like there was this concentrated effort by the altcoin companies to go in there and like try to usurp Bitcoin in Africa. Anybody who did go down that road probably got wrecked in 2018-19.
That's exactly what happened. And that's, you know, people would ask me all the time, especially Africans, oh, what altcoins do I buy? What altcoins do I buy? And I said, focus on Bitcoin. Anything else is extremely risky investment and you've been burned enough times. These people are predators. They're preying on you. Stick to Bitcoin. I told them Bitcoin itself is risky enough. Let's just stick to that and let's find a way to use it. Not as a means of investment, but as a means of exchange. These other coins are just investments. So I didn't talk about investments. I did it again as a means of exchange, as a clearing layer to give them access, to make them, give them that first world access so they stop seeing themselves as third world citizens. And the message paid off. You know, a lot of our users, especially in China and Africa, have become quite wealthy. You know, every time I go to Africa, I'll meet, you know, at least a few people that come up to me and say, hey, I was an unemployed student. Now I have 5 employees and my own business. Thank you so awesome. Much. And I live for that. It's awesome.
How did you guys strategically, like practically handle the rising fees in 2017 or during those couple of months there? Like, are you letting people keep the Bitcoin on the exchange, like on Paxful, so that they avoid base layer fees? Like,
yeah. And the Paxful internal network is massive. Literally like $100 million in volume goes through it. And I mean, a lot of volume happens in Paxful internally. We have over 5 million users on Paxful, many of them Africans.
Awesome.
Just got used to using Paxful internally.
So no Paxful fees. Is like a scaling layer for Bitcoin.
Yes. It's like our own little
peer-to-peer lightning network.
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
You don't hear so much about Paxful in the Bitcoin community, in the Bitcoin Twitter in America. You said it was the second biggest market. So why is there more talk about other exchanges and like HODL and local Bitcoins and all these things? Why aren't people talking about Paxful as much?
Yeah, I don't know. Our marketing is, we don't really invest a lot of money in marketing. We invest almost all of our money in customer support. Like half the company is customer support.
Really?
Yeah, because I mean, think about the challenge. The challenge is, for giving a safe marketplace to people in the emerging world, getting through all these immense hurdles of KYC and how, you know, KYC is a broken process across the entire world. There's 5 types of national ID in Nigeria. None of these Western providers can handle hardly any of them. So we have to face all these huge foundational challenges. We have to go into the riskiest markets in the world, like Nigeria and India and China, and make it safe for people. We have to focus all of our attention there. You know, there's people in Paxful that are working literally 20 hours a day. We don't have time to be singing our praises and marketing. We're focused on helping people and doing real customer support. And if you look at my Twitter timeline, there's still people that are upset because our disputes are not happening fast enough. We can barely keep ahead of the tide. Paxful's 350 people now.
Wow, really? Okay. And half of them are customer service. So are they doing like phone support too, or is it all customer service, email, chat?
all email, chat, you know, phone support would be impossible to do because, you know, people, it's different languages. People have to give us their, you know, their username, their trade IDs. That's impossible to do over the phone. So yes, I mean, we focus completely on customer support. We keep our heads down. We focus on the front lines. And we, you know, we don't really sing our praises very well. Maybe that'll change in the future when we take some money from some big VCs. And another thing is we're not really trying to cater to the people in the West who are trying to become invisible and all about this libertarian anarchism. I mean, they can be that way if they want. That's cool for them. We're focused on the invisible people who want to be visible. And they don't have the same kind of clout on Twitter or the same kind of penetration into the Western market as other people do. We're focused on what we believe to be the real work. That's not always glamorous. It's not always going to get us the spotlight, but that's fine. We're very happy to be leading the way where it really counts.
Do you guys have educational content that teaches your 5 million users like why they should use Bitcoin also as a partial store of value to store some of their wealth? Or is it mostly educating people about like how to use Bitcoin, how to use Paxful, that sort of thing?
We have content that educates them about the entire spectrum of services that Bitcoin offers. But most of our content about the store of wealth is really teaching them how to protect their wealth, like how to use two-factor authentication. The two-factor struggle is real, believe me. I mean, most Africans don't use two-factor. Most Africans, unfortunately, use the same, most people in the world will use the same password for their email as they use on every, you know, financial website that they make an account on.
Right.
And sadly, in the case of Africans, like literally like 99% of every African e-commerce site or website in the world has had their database hacked. And every hacker has access to the emails there, and they're all stored in clear text. So literally, these poor people, all their passwords are in the hands of hackers and drain their accounts. So we have to spend so much time just trying to educate people about basic security. You know, just use two-factor, not SMS two-factor. Use Google Authenticate, like the simplest, most basic things. But that's where we need to focus our time. If we weren't doing that, I'm sure a lot more people would know what Paxful is, but we'd be spending a lot of our money advertising and whatnot.
Right.
All of our time goes there.
What's the percentage of your customers that are from Africa? You said they're the number one user base, but
I can't say exactly, but I believe it's half or more than half, honestly, right now.
Right.
India's moving up there quite quickly as well. But most of the vast majority of our customers are from the emerging world, meaning not America or Europe, but outside of those places.
Would you guys be open to exploring the idea of having like a curated Paxful university kind of thing that teaches people about the value of holding Bitcoin and why it, you know, the Austrian case for holding Bitcoin, holding their savings in Bitcoin, or at least starting like a savings account, like a Bitcoin savings account kind of? Because you're focused on building for the people and like staying connected and being a hero to these people. So maybe outsource that to like somebody like Andreas Antonopoulos or something like that, that could create some custom content for your user base.
Very open to that. Anything having to do with education, we're very open to. Andreas Antonopoulos is one of the good guys in this space. He's always been my inspiration for a good long while. He's one of those guys that's been around forever. He's not out there trying to get rich quick. He's just providing real consistent value. So yeah, we're open to allies from every sector of the Bitcoin space that is out there to actually help real human beings, you know, harness the power of this magical internet money and take back their freedom. Absolutely.
There's a guy I follow too on Twitter, Tim Akinbo. Have you heard of him?
No.
He's a good African Bitcoiner to follow. He's now, well, because of the pandemic stuff, he's not able to go, but he got accepted to the Chaincode Labs residency program to come and become a Bitcoin developer, come to the States. He's a good guy to follow. He's really super into the Lightning Network and Bitcoin as a savings technology and things like that. So if anybody's listening to this that's maybe wondering who's a good African Bitcoiner to follow, I'd recommend him. You got anybody specifically that you can like, that you follow online on Twitter that's got a good voice of the developing world and for Bitcoin?
Yeah, any of our Paxful peers, there's so many of them. Our peer program is one of the most successful things that we've done. We literally have hundreds of Paxful peers, and they educate in mass constantly. They teach people not just how to use Bitcoin basics, but actually how to start their own business using Bitcoin and Paxful. And that, to me, that's the most amazing thing there is, because there are people on Paxful that have built their own little versions of a Western Union or a PayPal
cool.
using Paxful. Like there's a guy in South Africa, he He did a classical entrepreneur style. He found a problem. Nigerian migrant workers in South Africa that want to send money back home, and they just get paid in cash. They don't have a South African bank account, so how do they send money back home to mama in Nigeria? He said, hey, put your cash in my South African bank account. He takes it, buy Bitcoins with it, and then he sells the Bitcoin to someone in Nigeria and says, hey, send some money to this guy's mother's bank account. And he does it, and he charges half as much as Western Union.
That's cool.
It's completely instant. Everyone's happy. So there's examples like that popping up all over Paxful. Like, people are actually starting real financial services businesses on top of this platform.
To find people, I guess, is it a hashtag Paxful Peers or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Paxful Peer. Okay. That's a good
It's like an ambassador program where people can start businesses, yes, teach other people about it. Do you have an affiliate
program? We do. We have a very successful affiliate program that pays out very well, yeah.
What's the affiliate program details for anybody who's listening that maybe like, I want to try this, so I'm going to start recommending Paxful and help people use Paxful?
I'll send you the link right now on Paxful. It's paxful.com/affiliates.
So it's like 5% of the fees or something like that? How does it work?
It's a lot more than that. It's actually, people get 50% of our fee, which is anywhere from 0.1% to 5%, depending on the payment method. And people can give up to half of our
fees. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, people
this
do quite well off of it.
It's a super generous program.
Yeah, yeah. We're a super generous company, actually. You know, we take care of our people really well. We're voted one of the top 100 startups in the United States to work for. So it's like a big family over here. You know?
Geez, so we got to start getting all the Western Bitcoiners to sign up for your Paxful affiliate program, because they're used to getting smaller commissions with like FTX and all these other Deribit and all these other programs. They could get 50% commissions to start shilling Paxful.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, and the margins, you can start your own business on Paxful and make insane margins, you know, sometimes up to 50%. You know, Paxful does very well for people.
You know, let's play devil's advocate here for a second. What's the reason why Westerners wouldn't be using Paxful? I mean, obviously, there's got to be some reason why it's not as explosive in Canada and the United States and the UK and Australia as it is in the developing nations. What do you think it is? Is it because, like you said earlier, people are more concerned about KYC and privacy and stuff like that?
No, it's a very basic problem. It's really that, you know, people don't have the need to access these financial services, right? Like in those places, like, there are no other choices. Like, Paxful is literally coming to their rescue and giving them access where they would not have had access before. But in the West, people do have access. But for example, for me, you know, I'm from the West. I grew up in New York. But I use Paxful every day to send money to places where I don't have access, right? So that's something that we need to focus more on Western audiences, educating them like, hey, you want to make a payment to Europe or the UK or China? Use Paxful. You can do it in a second. It's something we have not put a lot of marketing time into because, you know, we've been so focused on the emerging world. That's where we believe that we can have the most impact. But absolutely, 2021 is going to be a new era for Paxful. We're really going to step things up. We're acquiring a lot of really new high-level talent to help us out with this mission. This company started with like two homeless guys, me and my co-founder, surfing couches in New York, literally. And now we're over 350 people, and we're having to take on a lot more responsibility to bridge the gap between these two worlds. So yes, we're looking for the very best talent in the world to help us, and we will eventually bring this magical clearing layer, this universal translator for money, to the entire world, east, west, global north, global south.
Are you guys going to be taking on venture capital to help you achieve that mission, or are you profitable enough you can just fund it yourself?
We are profitable, but we're going to have to take venture capital to take things to the level that we want to. I mean, we have really ambitious plans, Brad. I have plans to, I want to give people in Africa a free open source cell phone. I want to subsidize their data, you know, in addition to building 100 schools and wells in every district in Africa and giving them their own jerry can. Like, we have really, really big plans. And we're going to have to take on some financial capital allies to do so. We've had a lot of interest, but we haven't taken money from them because the honest truth is I don't really trust these Silicon Valley boys. Sorry, I said it, but I never have. So we're being very careful to find capital partners that understand our mission. They aren't going to say, hey, Ray, you're crazy. You're not going to be building any damn school. Sit down, kid. No, we're going to be building the schools, right? We're going to be doing these things. And I'm confident it is actually a wise business move, as well as crazy as it sounds. So it's taking us a little bit of time to find people that are in line with our values, but I'm sure they're out there. There's still good people who are rich out there.
Hopefully somebody, some kind of like altruistic Bitcoiner that was mining early is listening to this and they're kind of aligned with your mission. And I mean, there was the Pineapple Fund, right? That guy that was an early Bitcoiner donated $30 million in Bitcoin to charity for post-traumatic stress disorder or research and trauma research. And there's really good-hearted Bitcoiners out there that really do care about making a difference in the world. So I'm sure you will find it as long as you continue, you know, seeking that out. I'm sure you're going to attract it because you're building something that's most Bitcoiners don't even have a clue how big Paxful is and how successful you guys are at pushing forward that method of exchange that we're all talking about. Like all Bitcoiners are constantly talking about like Bitcoin is a solution for people in Venezuela and Africa and all these countries, but you're out there actually building it. One of the only people that are on the ground building that out. So I think all Bitcoiners owe you and Paxful a huge debt and a big thanks. And I'd love to see more people be retweeting your stuff and talking more about it and shilling the affiliate links and everything. Obviously, there's a place for like self-sovereignty, BTC pay server, things like that. But there's billions of people in the world, like Alex Gladstein says from Human Rights Foundation, who live under financial oppression. They're underbanked. They don't have access to banking. And you guys are building the tools for those people. And you're helping them make some money with arbitrage and affiliate programs and everything. So that's it's really inspirational. Thank you for all your work.
Thank you, Brad, for recognizing me. It really makes it, you know, it feels good, you know. I mean, people actually recognize that there's some good people out there that are doing the work on the front lines. It's not glamorous, but I mean, it's having immense impact. And that's the beautiful thing about this business, you know. Where would the world be without Bitcoin? There would be no other bright spot. There's no star as bright as Bitcoin is right now. We can never forget that. So every day I thank myself. I thank God for that because not always the technology amazing, it's the people that are amazing. You know, I was drawn to Bitcoin because of the amazing people in the scene, you know, like my co-founder, first person I met, you, people like this. It's just an army of the most amazing, like really good-hearted people in this scene. A lot of scammers out there, yes, as well, but the core is good and the core is strong, and that's beautiful. That's why we're here.
You said India was your third biggest marketplace. Market, yeah. India went through this like 2-year period of uncertainty where they were trying to ban Bitcoin, or it was the central bank was kind of saying like, no, we're not going to let Bitcoin happen. And then I think it was Sunny Ray's company, UnoCoin, had to like go to the Supreme Court and argue the case for Bitcoin at the Supreme Court, and they ended up winning. So what was it like for you guys during that period? Like what was happening in India and how did it become the third biggest market for you guys?
That's a great question. I mean, we always had a presence in India. Some of our earliest vendors were Indian. You know, the Indian people are very entrepreneurial. But it was only once Bitcoin got banned in India that a whole bunch of people started coming to us. And Paxful is actually the number one marketplace, peer-to-peer marketplace in India, even ahead of Binance-owned Wazirx. The Indian people just, you know, they like Paxful. They understand Paxful. And what's really amazing is just how Indians understand peer-to-peer. You know, if you think about it, have you heard of Hawala?
No.
Hawala is the Arabic word for money transfer. And the Indians, they have the system of Hawala in India literally since 1300 years. So Hawala happened a long time ago. Basically, these Arab traders, they were trading under a time under the Roman Empire. And the Roman Empire forbid agency. You know, they didn't allow agents or third-party transfers to happen. Ironically enough, American compliance doesn't like that either. European, they're the inheritors of Rome, right? So they still don't like it. So these merchants came up with the system of peer-to-peer money transfer where you could go to someone who's a Hawala and you could say, hey, I want to make a payment to Cairo. And, you know, you were in Milan and you go to some guy, his name is Habib, and Habib's like, no problem, bro. Give me this much money and Italian money, and my boy, you know, Ahmed in Cairo will give money to your homie, Rodrigo, when he comes to see him in Cairo. And then those two guys would just settle up between themselves because they have their own trust relationship. And all really peer-to-peer has done, what Bitcoin has done, is replace that trust relationship that was familial or whatever it might have been with the blockchain, right? With a trustless system. So now Paxful can introduce you to an army of, you know, legitimate, trustworthy Hawalas all over the world.
People
just get that. Like, that's their livelihood. So that's why, you know, peer-to-peer is going to grow immensely fast in India. I think it's going to grow faster in India than it is. And I think India will come to surpass China in peer-to-peer trades. And I think peer-to-peer is actually going to surpass all centralized exchange volume within the next 2 years. I made that announcement, I think, in summer.
Oh, that would be amazing.
It's
good for you guys.
Good for everybody. Good for everybody. Yeah. Because that's real volume. It's not just wash trading and a bunch of bots playing games with each other. It's real
and
human
it's,
beings.
And it's disruption, too. It strengthens the value proposition of peer-to-peer cash when the peer-to-peer network is promoted by companies like Paxful and all these companies that are building on Bitcoin where it's person-to-person. I feel like Bitcoiners should recognize the value of that strong peer-to-peer network. And, you know, we've got things like HODL HODL and BISC because it's online, but I never knew that existed, that you know, that cultural hawala, is it called?
Hawala, yeah. It's a huge concept. It's been before, the centralized Western banking system, it was all hawala. It's what governed the entire world, you know? So it's a huge thing. And basically, you know, what we're trying to do is hawala 2.0, and the Indians just get that.
You know, what is Bitcoin but money, because we say it's money and we have this shared illusion of value, you know what I mean? Like, because everybody thinks it's valuable, it's valuable. If the cultural hawala thing is, that's what makes trust, is that, you know, it's your word, it's your reputation, then that can be leveraged for sure. And you just use the trustless system of Bitcoin on top of that cultural trust network. That's amazing.
It is amazing. And it goes even deeper than that. When you really research hawala, you realize that it was the Muslim community that pushed that very hard. They led the whole thing. And if you think about it, like you lead a lot of these Muslim scholars, they consider the Quran, you know, to be the world's first immutable ledger, since it hasn't been changed, right? And because of that, there was a trust network built up between all these Muslim traders. And they knew that if, hey, they try to, you know, cheat someone else, the network will come down on you, right? And you'll be ostracized from the network. So what we've done is we've replaced the immutable ledger of, you know, the last testament with the immutable ledger of the blockchain. So now so, everyone can use it without, you know, being a Muslim or a Jew or a Christian or whatever.
That's funny. The Muslims, you may want to use the marketing slogan that Bitcoin is layer one, but that's layer zero.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the layer underneath Bitcoin.
Yeah, that might win them over, I think.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, one of the things I remember reading earlier in the summer when I was doing my kind of research on the peer-to-peer volume all over the world and trying to look at stablecoins versus Bitcoin was this cool article that someone had written about Paxful. And, you know, one of the arguments a lot of Westerners make is that people don't like volatility, so they won't use Bitcoin. But then this person had gone through the cycle of a Paxful trade and looking at like the biggest Paxful traders, and they noticed that people just generally didn't really care that much about volatility on Paxful because they're so used to extreme volatility with their currencies and with remittances that they're willing to accept a 15-20% volatility because that's a walk in the park for them. Could you walk the listeners through a Paxful peer trader? Like, what do they do in an average day? What does their day look like if they're processing transactions from Bitcoin to like gift cards or Bitcoin to a Chinese bank account? Or like, what does it look like for someone who's like making a living on Paxful?
Yeah, so it's a great question. There's two sides of the table, right? Let's say there's a person that's running a business on Paxful, right? Let's say the Chinese vendor who's, you know, getting discount gift cards and giving Bitcoin in return. Right. And he's getting the discounted gift cards anyway, up to like a 50% discount. And he's somehow managing to turn those gift cards back into Bitcoin. And that's his business. Now, we've made a lot of millionaires in China. You know, I met these three guys. They came up to me in Shenzhen and they were dressed so well. I was like, oh my goodness. And they told me, hey, we were poor village boys about 8 months ago. Now we have an army of 60 people working for us doing this business. So what they do is they get discount gift cards, they give Bitcoin exchange, and they mostly deal with Africans, right? And they do a lot of trades a day. These guys could do up to $10,000 in trades a day, right?
Wow.
And I asked them, what do you do with those gift cards? And they said, well, sometimes we'll resell them on Taobao, which is like the Chinese Amazon, at a profit as well. Sometimes we'll take them and cash them in to play games. You know, we're used to, that's how they started. That's how they got into it.
What do they mean, cash it in to play games?
Get it to buy, you know, in-app purchases for games on Google Play Store or the iTunes Store.
Sometimes like personally, or they'll sell it to someone else who's doing it?
Personally, in the beginning, that's how they got turned on to the whole thing.
Okay, so they were like trying to make some money. Okay, cool.
And then they said, oh yeah, and sometimes we'll sell it to people because they can access, you know, Western media and content that they couldn't access through the firewall because it's a USD denominated gift card. Okay, great.
So for people who don't know, there's that USD firewall in China where, yeah. Like, can you explain that a little bit? You said there's like $100 limit in Africa that people could only, you know, yeah. Send out $100 a month in Africa. What is it like in China?
Well, in China, basically you can't access any Western content, right, on the internet, through the Apple iPhone store and all that stuff, right? But if you have a gift card that is a USD gift card, you can actually access like American content with that. So a lot of Chinese would actually use these gift card credits that they bought on Paxful to access American and European content, music, movies, etc., games, etc., and get past the Great Firewall of China, right? Another interesting use case. So let's go to the other side of the table. And let's say an African who's wants to send money back home, right? A lot of the, and Matt Arlong, and he wrote a great article called "Why Paxful is the Most Important Bitcoin Company You Never Heard Of."
Yeah, that's the one that I was talking about.
Yeah, he details several of these use cases. So an African who might, you know, he might want his family member in California to send him money. Previously, his options were Western Union, which is cumbersome, right? Expensive, but the main issue is that, you know, it'll take like a day. And then they'll have to go to the Western Union office, which might be an hour away, might be a huge line, etc. Or you can tell them, hey, just go to the store, buy an Amazon gift card with cash, take a picture of the back of the gift card and the copy of the receipt showing you bought it with cash. And then, you know, that person will take it and start a trade on Paxful, sell it to a guy on Paxful. Maybe he'd probably be in China. He would take a loss of 30% or whatever it was. And then he would take that Bitcoin and sell it to someone in Nigeria or wherever he was in Africa and say, now send me local money from your African bank account to my local African bank account. And he might actually make a profit there of up to 10% because that person wanted Bitcoin. So he actually got money remitted to him. He basically turned a gift card into money in the bank via Paxful using two peer-to-peer trades. So the Africans got very, very ingenious. You know, they would find a way to turn this gift card into money in the bank using two peer-to-peer trades, which is why at the end of the day, Paxful turns Bitcoin into a universal translator for money. Because any one of our 355 payment methods can go in or out. And that's absolutely ingenious.
That's, you know, awesome.
That's why we say Bitcoin is a clearing layer for all this. It's like, wow. It's a universal translator for money. Like, that's what the world has needed for a very long time.
Paxful is pretty much like the Uber of currency right now.
Yeah.
Not just currency, but gift cards and any
payment
else
method.
That people can.
Any payment method. It's not just the 123 currencies in the world, but it's the thousands of payment methods.
How many users does Uber have? Like a billion?
I don't think that many. Maybe, I don't know, maybe at least maybe a few hundred million. I don't know. I can't say.
How many employees do you think they have?
I don't know, thousands for certain.
So let's see, how many employees do you need to hire to get to Uber? I'm going to Google it. How many employees does Uber have? Uber has 19,000 employees.
19,
are you ready for 19,000 hires?
Does that include their drivers too? No.
No, I think that's just their employees. That doesn't seem right. That's a lot
madness.
Of
madness. That's I can barely handle 350s. It's giving me gray hairs here. 19,000? Oh my goodness. Oh,
well, that's no. I guess that's what scaling looks like. I think Binance must have thousands of employees by now.
I think they have over 1,000, but not that many. Binance is run in a very kind of chaotic style where like every decision has to go through CZ. It's like controlled chaos, but he makes it work. He's like a master of logistics. So.
How do you and your partner run Paxful?
It's a great question. I mean, when we were 80 people, we ran it very, very tightly, very, very well. We had an army of Jedi that really pushed things through. And now we're kind of locked in this struggle where we're bringing in all these really experienced people who have, you know, worked for McKinsey and all these big companies to try to give us processes so we can scale. But at the same time, we don't want to lose that agility and that determination and that heroic fervor to kind of go in and save the whole world. You know, that if you try to bring in this bureaucracy of a bank, you can't have both of those things. So we're in this battle right now trying to keep this balance. It's very, very difficult. I think I'll write a book on this someday. But say a prayer for me, please. That's all I can say.
So you're trying to scale up right now and retain your nimbleness that you know when you were a startup.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, the Paxful is full of people that want to change the world. We don't want to work for a bank. But at the same time, you know, we have to really not just adhere to compliance, but innovate in compliance, because believe me, like, people are looking at what we're doing. You know, we have to lead the way in the most kosher, legitimate way possible so that this whole industry continues to thrive. That's even more challenging.
Have you looked into or ever heard Ricardo Semler?
No.
He's like a Brazilian entrepreneur. He did a TED Talk on how to run a company with almost no rules. And he scaled up his company. I'm pretty sure he's either he's worth at least 8 figures, maybe 9 figures. Potentially he's a billionaire. And he scaled up his company similar by kind of decentralizing things. So he would give the employees a lot of leeway in making decisions. And he would actually encourage the employees to keep their bosses accountable, and they had the power to hire and fire each other and their bosses and even the CEO of the company. So like they had the ability to fire the CEO. And he one time, I mean, he encouraged them to start their own companies, like to compete with the company. He'd encourage the employees that if they felt like they wanted to start it up, then he would just invest and they would just compete. And then Semler would own a little piece of the competition. So I mean, it was a super interesting management style that this guy used, and he does consulting and coaching now. You maybe want to give him a call sometime and see
Ricardo Semler. Okay, yeah. I'm definitely gonna get it. This sounds like the kind of madness we need, honestly.
Yeah. It sounds like the Bitcoin model. He also then started up the same type of thing for a school system where the kids had control over the curriculum and they had control to kick the teachers out of the school. So it's pretty funny. It's pretty fun. He's a fun guy. And then there's this other guy, Dan Pink, that writes a lot about motivation. And he talks about autonomy, mastery, and purpose as the three main values that motivate star players. And he encourages companies that are like in your position that are growing and that are trying to figure out how to scale to focus on finding the star players, giving them autonomy, mastery, and purpose so that they can... Yeah. Feel like they're like that sounds like
that's
what
exactly
you're doing.
What we're trying to do. Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, that's the main thing. Like, as I travel the world and I meet people, I'm looking for these Jedi or hustlers, you can call them. And I'm trying to find, like, you find these guys, okay, and I want to be able to drop them in and they should just be able to take off and get all the support they need. That's the challenge. The bigger you get, the more rules pop up, the more like blockages can happen, the more people can say no or half no or whatever. So it's extremely difficult. I'm learning the challenge of scaling. And it doesn't help that this business has never really been attempted before. No one has ever tried to build a financial services platform for the entire world, across the entire world, based on, you know, this magical internet money with unclear regulatory frameworks. And it's something else, really. You know, I failed. I had 11 failures in a row before Paxful. And each one of those things taught me a lot. You know, each one of those things taught me an essential lesson that I need right now. So I'm very thankful for that. But
do you want to mention maybe one or two of the ones that stuck out most, maybe that might motivate somebody listening that's kind of going through a failure or a business that they maybe just need to stop? And
yeah, well, my very first startup, I tried to do Groupon in 1999 using SMS text messages. And this is back when Americans had no idea what text messages even were. It didn't work. I would try to pitch these bars in New York City in the Lower East Side on this, and they kicked me the hell out of there. So I had to pivot to ringtones. I did like the Napster of ringtones. That was enormously successful, but I still had the immense burden and pain of dealing with the music publishers at a time when they just took down Napster and they were high on their horse. So, you know, that didn't end as well as I would have liked. But it was, again, another huge lesson for me. And I had a file sharing startup. I had another music startup. I had social networking startups. I was the first to do virtual gifts and that news feed. Facebook got those ideas from my startup. They couldn't.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they couldn't make the virtual gifts work because Zuck is not tuned like that. But
did you make it as an app on Facebook?
No, it was an independent site that was started right at the same time Facebook was started.
Okay,
we were on national TV and news and all of that. But anyway, we actually even had our own little economy in there using our own credit system, and people could actually gift themselves money. It was a transformative experiment. I couldn't keep it going because I was going to turn it into something like OnlyFans at the time.
Okay.
But I was
ahead of your game there.
Yeah, way ahead of the. If I brought that out now, it'd still be ahead of the game. But yeah, that's just how my mind operates. But you know, anyway, so I managed to buy my mother a house with that first ringtone startup, and then she got divorced, and I said, okay, I have to stop my. I stopped tech completely for like 3 years and just went traveling the world, did boxing, MMA, you know, traveled the planet. Then my mother got divorced and I'm like, okay, I got to go buy her another house. So I came back and I thought, okay, I'm going to hit a gold every single time now. But no, I had 11 failures in a row. And, you know, I'm not going to get into the whole journey there, but, you know, my journey has been quite wild, but it's been my journey. Can't take it back for anything.
Right now, you're at this really great moment where your company's growing, you're in the bull market, like you're probably growing like crazy now. What are you using now to kind of keep your energy levels up and keep your mind focused and keep focused on your three values?
I've been completely sober for about 11 years. I stopped drinking about 11 years ago in 2011. I just stopped smoking, actually. I went to Mexico and I did a ayahuasca and DMT ritual.
Oh, nice.
I haven't had a cigarette since, so I'm very proud about that, to be completely clean. I'm still drinking coffee, unfortunately. There's nothing that I really do, aside from a great morning routine. I see an actual path now, Brad, to actually changing the world, to making a real sustainable change, you know, and I see the difference happening every day. And, you know, there's not one magical moment, you know. If you look at my Twitter timeline, you'll see people are screaming and yelling at me all the time. Oh, you locked my account. You guys are a bunch of scamblers. But that's just the pain of actually going into the world and trying to change something and giving people that have never been heard a voice, right? It's not easy. Sometimes it's not fun. It can be really dirty and nasty. And we have to balance that with, you know, these American regulators and all that, and trying to create a real culture of compliance. Immense challenges, but it's the greatest challenge in the world, Brad. I can't think of a greater challenge than this right now. And as taxing as it is to lead 350 people, and it's all about balancing your internal mind state. And the challenges are so extreme, and you know, it's a kind of a thankless job that if you don't monitor yourself and you don't give your own self and soul enough love and respect, you can go toxic very easily. And as a CEO, if you break, other people will feel it immediately, right? So it really is all about you and what's happening in your head. And any leader has to respect that. That plus the immense opportunity we have to actually change the world, kind of break the matrix right now. We can break it, you know, Brad. We can just, all we have to do is just scratch it for a moment. And once people see, wait a minute, this is all an illusion. We don't have to be poor. We were born to be in a state of natural wealth and abundance. All of us, even us black and brown people, yes, we can be rich too. Everybody. No more guilt or shame or anything of any kind. Like that fact that we could actually reach that, even for a split second, that's what gets me up in the morning. I'll go through anything just for the chance of making that dream happen. As crazy as it sounds, I mean, to get here without any help or any money from anyone and get this far, I mean, God's on our side, Brad. You know, I'm not trying to push religion in anyone's face, but I truly, I'm a believer. I was homeless 6 years ago in New York with my co-founder, really homeless. I mean, wandering the streets of the Lower East Side in Sutton Place. You can find some great clothes, by the way, in Sutton Place that people know about. And there's some awesome sushi places in Tribeca for those of you that are living in New York that might have some issues. But when I got to that place and I didn't know who else to ask for help, you know, I asked the one entity that was listening and I got it. So I'm always going to be a believer for that sake. So if anyone is listening here, no matter how hard it gets, you can turn to God. You know, God's always listening. And that's all I'll say about that. You can call it by any name you want, but there's a force out there that's greater than us and that loves us.
Usually in the podcast, like, how can people follow you? But I feel like it's more appropriate to ask you, like, how can people help you? What do you need help with? How can we, like, help you achieve your mission?
Yeah, we need talent. We need the best talent in the world. That's really what this is all about right now. So if you're listening to this podcast and you're driven to change the world, and you've got those Jedi skills, and you're ready to go, and you're not looking to be held back, you're looking for a team that can really help you move, looking to make your mark on the world and make a real difference, and it's not just about the money, then you can find me. I'm Ray Paxwell on Twitter, Ray Paxwell on Instagram, RayPaxwell.com. If you can find me, you can apply for Paxwell. We're constantly hiring. We're looking for the very best people, people who are truly driven. Just find us, apply, come on in. If you're real and we're talking to you, we're going to feel it right away and we're going to bring you right in. So don't feel, you know, just do it. just do it because we need you. We truly do need the best to make this happen. And we don't need 19,000 droids or stormtroopers, you know, 1,000 Jedi, we can save the whole damn planet.
Nice. So what about the people that aren't the superstars? There's a lot of us out there. What can we do to help you? Just like sign up as an affiliate and start trying to make some money promoting Paxful? What can they do?
Yes, you can sign up as an affiliate. You know, there's a lot you can sign up on Paxful. But, you know, if you're listening to this, you may not think your skills are superstar level, but if your heart is superstar level, believe me, that's enough. And you can get the skills because there's people here that have the skills and want to teach you the skills. All we're looking for is people with an open heart. And you'd be surprised how hard that is to find. It's not about the skills. It's really about the heart. It really is.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate the conversation. It was great. It went a little different than I expected, but I'm super inspired by what you're doing. So I really hope you all the success and hope you guys just blow up and help push out this Hawala network of peer-to-peer trust.
Yeah, brother. Someone's got to do it. And everyone else stepped back. So here we are.
Yeah, everyone else went. Everyone else got, well, not everyone, but a lot of the big companies decided just, well, we're going to do ICOs and we're going to do altcoins and we're going to do all this. And you're focusing on this laser-focused mission. So I hope Bitcoiners listen to this and get a new look into what Paxful's trying to do and your philosophy. You say you're not a maximalist, but like, I think you're definitely aligned to the Bitcoiner mission. And yeah, and that's important to see pro Bitcoin companies like you going out there and representing to the world, not just that Bitcoin's number go up and good investment and store of value and Austrian economic money and all that stuff, but it's actually useful for human rights and just access to money. It's just great to see you doing that. I really do hope you succeed with it.
Thank you so much, Brad. It means a lot. I really appreciate it. You're a warrior in this space. So it always feels good to hear that from people like you, especially. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, I'll hopefully have another conversation with you soon when you guys are at 790,000 customers. And, well, actually, you're already way over that. So yeah. 790 employees and a billion customers.
Yeah.
God, that'd really be pretty soon. Epic.
Yeah. Yeah. It's coming. The day is coming. Probably a lot sooner than any of us think. We have to be ready for it. You know, there's a big, you know, compliance purge happening right now. The people that survive that, again, people are going to lead things forward. But the challenge is not to lose your heart during all that process. You know, like, we have to keep the heart intact. Otherwise, it's just going to be a bunch of, you know, fancy consultants coming in and trying to squeeze as much money up. That's not what PAX will turn out. I won't let it turn into that. You know, so this is a personal struggle for me to make sure that this company always keeps its heart. And I'm blessed to have one of the best co-founders on the planet that I trust even more than a brother. So God willing, we will make it happen, Brad. The world not the way it used to
be. Thanks for listening, everyone. Before we go, I just wanted to read this review that a listener recently left. This podcast just brings you good moods and positivity. Thanks for educating and uplifting myself and the community that listens. That review is from Beefy Muscles. Well, thanks for those kind words, Beefy Muscles. And hey, if you haven't listened to the episode I did with Preston Pish a few episodes back, please make sure to go do that. It was a super positive and uplifting episode. I'm probably going to go listen to it myself again very soon. It's always good to have a nice super dose of positivity and good mindset, and Preston really delivered in that episode. So anyway, thanks for tuning in, guys. I hope to have you back again soon. And I've been Brad Mills. You're welcome.